children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, Saving Kids, Kids of all ages and all stages, from mental health issues, including addiction, school issues. If somebody wants a referral, feel free to call our confidential number. You can call anonymous, and that is 718-758-0400. We are available from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day, Friday until 2 hours before Shabbos. We're open Motzei Shabbos and all day Sunday as well. So maybe you want to write the number down for yourself, for a loved one, for your friend, a neighbor, or maybe someone you sit next to in shul. Again, our number is 718-758-0400. Tonight, we are going to be talking about how it is different and how it can be better parenting. And I have with us, I'd like to introduce a colleague, a friend, many years, Dr. Kotzowitz, who I'd like to welcome you on first. How are you?
How are you? Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm so happy that you finally were able to come on, and everybody has to excuse my cold. I'm sorry, but I'm struggling getting over the flu, but we'll try our best. Dr. Kotzowitz, I know you so many years. You're a Bina columnist. So many people read about you. I know you do parenting classes. I know you're involved with the Lynx organization, which I know their Shabbaton is now coming up. And you're so busy. It's hard to schedule. So I'm really so happy that you have the time tonight to be on. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, Refuah Shleima on your cold. I think that I think that it's like emblematic of what you do at Mask, that even with a cold, doesn't matter what, you're always soldiering through, and no matter what the consequences or what the conditions are, you're always there for parents and kids as a resource. I remember, I think you were one of the first organizations that I knew about, like when I first started working in the mental health field, when there really weren't a lot of organizations out there. You know, there was always Mask that you could have a parent call and get help, and, you know, and you've always been soldiering through, even at the very beginning when there was, like, so little awareness in the community, you were there.
Thank you. Yes, when I started with February, Ms. Shemmel will be starting out with 23rd year, and I know that you've been in the field many years. I think, 2002? I think I remember you said you were in the field. Tell me a little bit about what your background is for our listeners, please.
So in 2002, I graduated my master's program in school psychology at NYU, and I continued on in the PhD program, but I was already a certified school psychologist, so I was working at that point in, like, non-public schools, various yeshiva schools, as a consultant school psychologist. And which really was before there was a lot of mental health done in the schools, and for sure in, you know, the more right-wing yeshivas, it just wasn't as done. So we, it was really that first time that we had, like, working with that child who wasn't fitting in, or working with the teacher and helping them, you know, alter the class to give this child success. It was a very new thing back then. And, you know, in the years intervening while I was working as a school psychologist, I was in my PhD program for clinical psychology, also at NYU, graduated that in 2009, and went into private practice, probably a couple of years after that. I did some postdocs in between. So a lot of what happened for me, I think, is that I started realizing that one of the big pieces that is crucially missing is parenting education. Like, there's a missing gap. We can treat kids, we can certainly help individual kids, but sometimes we have to take a step back and help parents with certain parenting skills that once they have, not that there's something wrong with them, but simply let's get them educated so that then they can be the ones to support their children.
So there is no parent manual when you get married on how to parent. But I do want to mention that from when we started MASC almost 23 years ago to today, so much has changed. And just in the last 10 years, there's been so much change with parenting. So how do you see it differently, like just in the last 10 years?
So for sure, from 10 years ago, I think the world has changed dramatically. For sure, since you started MASC, the world has changed. And I think MASC has been part of the positive parts of that change, which is our community in general, all our various communities, are much more informed about mental health, more willing than they've been before to proactively address it, to work on it, to talk to kids, to be okay with a child going to psychotherapy. For sure, interest in parenting classes has exploded, which I think is a very good thing, but I think the world is very different. It's scarier. We have not been equipped to deal with some of the challenges that technology faces. The fact that our kids have so much more freedom to access information and to, you know, learn about things than they ever did in the past, and technology is changing and changing and changing rapidly, I think we are not yet as prepared as we could be to deal with what the new world and what the new challenges are offering, because they're changing every year.
Yeah, they sure are. And I know that on the MASC helpline, when we speak to parents, kids get addicted to pornography. They get exposed to different things on social media, you know, Instagram, et cetera. And they're like in shock. And when we tell them, why didn't you have your child's phone, let's say tags and get some, you know, there's so many different programs available to monitor your young children's phones. I'm not talking about adults. I'm talking about young children that
right.
get into sites that they should never have been exposed to. And they don't even realize how important it is. So I'd like you to touch on that, please, for a moment. About speak to the parents. Tell them about how dangerous it is giving the phone to young children that don't have those programs in place.
So definitely, it's an extremely dangerous thing. Parents don't sometimes realize how the technology evolves, and the technology is designed in such a way that younger children, younger brains, intuitively can use it and can understand it and can figure out passwords and figure out like hacks and workarounds and all sorts of things in a way that an adult mature brain can't. I always joke, you know, I've started giving free parenting classes on Instagram, and I started, like, just in general, you know, upping my social media presence, because it is a place where young parents nowadays get their information. And I couldn't figure out how to do something on Instagram, and I was asking a computer consultant. He said, honestly, do you have, like, a 9-year-old around? Because a 9-year-old will figure this out in 5 seconds flat. I said, I do have a 9-year-old around, but she is never, ever, ever touching my phone. She does not go on social media. But his point was, what you can't figure out, a 9-year-old could figure out in 5 seconds flat. And it's really true. So we as parents have to know that it's not like I can trust my kids. Sure, you can trust your kids, but can you trust the 40-year-old predator who's pretending to be a girl their age, chatting with them on some gaming app? You can't. Sure, you can trust your kid, but your kid is not. If that predator can fool the FBI, they can definitely fool your child.
So talking about safety, I'd like to bring up living in today's world about anti-Semitism. And you know, parents are struggling with how to make their children feel safe, going to shul, going to school. And I was wondering if you can just, you know, help you know, how parents can talk to their kids, in general about the reality of the world we live in today.
Sure, it is a very scary world nowadays. Like, we have to acknowledge to ourselves first the reality that we are scared. It's scary in a way that it hasn't been. I remember in, like, 1985 when Reagan was president, I was a little kid, and I remember reading about, like, kids living in Ireland, I think one of those Scholastic publications. I wanted to, like, to live in an atmosphere of terrorism. I'm thinking, like, wow, I'm so lucky that I live in this country where I don't have to deal with what these kids in Ireland are dealing with on a daily basis. Well, now we kind of do. Like, this is the reality that our children are being raised in today. So first of all, one thing I have to tell parents, and I tell this a lot because a lot of parents are a little resistant to this idea, when something scary happens in the news, especially with all the social media and all the people who know information nowadays, you don't have a choice between not telling your child and your child not finding out and your child yes finding out and potentially being scared. The only choice you have is between your child finding out from you in a healthy way that helps manage their fears, or your child finding out from another child in school in an unhealthy way that makes them feel, you know, much more scared. So we do have to figure out how to talk to our children about scary events, and we do have to tell them when they happen. What I like to use is I use what I call the lollipop analogy. I fill up a jar with green lollipops, and then in that jar I put one red lollipop. And I say to the children, look at this jar. It's full of green lollipops, right? And there's one red lollipop. Is it likely that you will pick a red lollipop out of the jar? And they say, no, it's much more likely you'll pick out a green lollipop. So a green lollipop represents a regular normal day or a regular normal stranger, right? A person who is not dangerous, who doesn't want to hurt you, or a day that's going to be a regular day where nothing dangerous happens. However, there is a red lollipop in the jar. It is possible that I will pull out a red lollipop. And the red lollipop might be what recently happened in Jersey City or what happened in Muncie, right? Like those types of tragedies, right? So I might pick out a red lollipop. So I need to discuss that red lollipop kind of day with you. I need to teach you safety and situational awareness. You need to know what to do if you're ever in a situation like that. I'm a big believer that schools should all be instituting lockdown drills. Every yeshiva school in every locale across the world should have one. More than one, but should have a protocol for lockdown drills so that the kids know what to do the same way we have fire drills. And the same way fire drills don't necessarily make children suddenly be terrified of fires. They understand that there could be a fire. We need to learn safety procedures, and then once we know the safety procedures, we'll be okay. So we need to be teaching children these safety procedures, sadly. One of the other things I like to do is I like to have parents talk to emotions with kids. Like, in our brains, there are different emotions. There's, you know, sadness, and there's anger, and there's fear, and there's love, right? And these are all emotions that float around in our brain. And when an emotion comes, it comes to teach us a lesson about the world. It comes to tell us something. So fear comes to teach us a lesson about danger, right? So Mr. Fear is coming to you right now to tell you, you know, what happened, you know, all these recent tragedies and scary stories, they happen. So I better learn what to do to handle them. And then we could tell Mr. Fear, okay, I know how to do a lockdown drill. I know situational awareness. In my own practice, I do have an instructor come in and do self-defense with my teenage female patients and also with just teenage girls in general who want to take it, because I firmly believe we should know just the basics of safety and situational awareness, just how to defend yourself. Plus, it's a lot of fun. But I feel like children should be taught these basic skills so that they have them and they don't have to be scared, because they can say to Mr. Fear, yes, Mr. Fear, you gave me a good warning. I know what to do now, so now you can go away because I got this, like the way we do with fire, right? We're scared of a fire. We have a fire drill. We know what to do. Okay, now we can tell Mr. Fear to go away because he did his job.
You know, I'm thinking about the articles that you write in Bina Magazine, and many a times you refer to Hack a Child's Challenge into a Superpower. Can you tell us more about how parents can do that?
Right. So I have this big thing about how your challenge always is your greatest strength. Whatever it is that you struggle with is actually your superpower. Like, that's the way Hashem designed your brain, for a very good reason. And you are going to use that superpower ultimately to really, like, change the world or do something amazing. So, for example, going back to fear, right? if you're an anxious child, what I call the careful child, and you have a Mr. Fear in your brain who's constantly telling you that all sorts of things that could be dangerous, that's your superpower. You have a superpower of noticing what could be dangerous, and we're going to call that, this is your job to learn how to plan ahead and maybe even educate other people about safety, right? So we call it proactive problem solving, right? The problem solving event. What could possibly go wrong, and how will you handle it? And if you do that, I worked with a child once with very severe OCD. She was really scared of germs, and we learned how to deal with it. And this ultimately sparked an interest in germs and an interest in, you know, how health works, to the point where now, first of all, she's so over her OCD that she's actually a nurse. She's a nurse practitioner today, because it sparked such an interest in germs and health and biology and how things work that ultimately that became her mission in life, her superpower, and her OCD is so much better that she's comfortable walking in. This was a girl who wouldn't go to school for fear of germs, and now she's comfortable walking into a hospital where there are a lot of germs because she is a nurse, and this is what she does, and this is her mission in life, to help people with their health. So if you embrace those difficult emotions, ultimately they do become your superpower if you're willing to do the work.
A parent needs to know how to parent a child who's been traumatized. What ideas can you offer to parents?
Right. So in general, parents are, need to be educated about parenting different types of children differently. And yes,
that's,
unfortunately...
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
Anokh-nar-al-pi-dar-ko.
100%.
The child.
100%.
Right. So that's basically what you're saying. Different children react differently to different things. I know Moshe Shabbos. I was in Muncie, 3 blocks away from where they had that terrible anti-Semitic event with the, stabbings at Rabbi Rattenberg's shul. And we were at a Hanukkah party. And the children, all the kids there, were so frightened. We were 3 blocks away. We heard all the ambulance going by. We didn't even know all the details. They sent out a message, lock your doors, lock your windows, lock your cars. So, what do you tell parents while it's happening even to say to the children?
So I agree, and it was very scary what happened in Muncie. And I agree about Hanochanar Alpidarko. It doesn't just mean how he is, neurologically set up to learn. It also means Alpidarko, like the derech of how the world is and the, culture in which you are raising him. So yes, we do have to talk to kids and deal with the fact that they are really experiencing very scary things at a very young age in a way that perhaps we didn't. Right? And I think it's very important. First of all, the most important thing I always tell parents about talking to kids about their feelings is never, ever use the word don't when it comes to an emotion. Don't be scared. Don't be sad. Don't be angry. Like, your emotions are your emotions. All you're doing when you say don't to a child about an emotion is you're telling the child to invalidate themselves. But I am scared. Right? I could pretend I'm not scared, but I am. Right? But I am angry, but I am frustrated, but I am sad, right? Whatever the emotion is, it's so much better to say to the child, it's okay to be scared, particularly a child who, let's say, experienced a trauma in the past and now there's another traumatic event in their life, right? It's so much better to say to the child, Mr. Fear is coming to tell you something very important. It really is very important. So we're going to have to pay attention to him, but then we go on with our lives. I think what happened in Muncie, what Rattenberg did afterwards, right, the next day going to Achnas Sefer Torah, celebrating proudly in the streets. We listen to fear, we have more security there, we follow security plans, but we are going to go on with our lives and we are going to continue because we are going to be resilient. I think we show children both sides. We honor fear, we listen to him, but we don't give in to him entirely. Don't let fear wrap us into bubble wrap and let us, cower in a corner somewhere because something might happen. We say to fear, thank you, I'll take appropriate precautions, and then we go forward with our lives.
Well, so let's go a little forward, and I'd like to talk about another issue that I know you speak about a lot, and that's how children deal with bullies. It's really something parents should be dealing with, or is it the job of the school, in your opinion?
So here's something that I think, honestly, dealing with bullies isn't the job of the parent or the school. Ultimately, it's the job of the child who's being bullied. And I'll tell you why. That sounds like, I have a very famous stance that I take, which is that there's no such thing as a bully. There's only a child exhibiting bullying behaviors. And that's because they're all children, right? If we look at a kid as, oh, she's a bully, then we're just going to kick her out of school. We have nothing to do with her. If we say, wait, we have a kid who is exhibiting bullying behaviors, and we have another child who is allowing herself in some way. Now, it might not be her fault. We're not blaming the victim here. There's another child who's being targeted by bullying behaviors. We need to teach both of them what to do about it. The girl who's being bullied needs to learn exactly how to respond when someone bullies you. I call those tricky comments, and you need to learn how to answer tricky comments. The reason for that is bullying, especially amongst girls, but also amongst boys, does not occur at a place or a time usually where a teacher can effectively intervene. Bullies, a kid who chooses to engage in bullying behavior, that kid is smart enough usually to do it where adults will not know about it. So you can't say that the teacher should intervene more. They should. They should certainly be vigilant and help, but the bullying is almost always going to take place out of the sight of the teacher. Same thing with parents, right? The bullying is not going to take place when the parent is there. Now, if you get a phone call from the school and they say your child's engaging in bullying behavior, you need to get your child help. That's not even a question. Your child is being bullied, you need to get your child help. You need to intervene. But can you actually, like, go over to that kid's house and say, you know, don't say mean things to my daughter? No, because it's not going to work. The child herself who is being bullied needs to be taught exactly how to respond, and it totally can be done. To such an extent that I myself was bullied as a kid, and even though I was bullied as a kid, I will say that there's no such thing as a bully, because there's only a girl who doesn't yet have skills, or a boy who doesn't yet have skills to deal with that type of interaction, and a child who doesn't yet have skills to deal with their negative emotions in a better way than being a bully, right? So it's not about, like, should the school intervene more? Sure, because the school, a teacher should do is be available to listen and to hear. So if a child comes and says, my friend makes these comments to me, and I'm not sure if they're mean or nice, and, like, she'll say something like, oh, I love your skirt, my little sister has one just like it. Was she trying to hurt my feelings? She keeps, like, making parties and forgetting to invite me. Does that mean that, like, she really forgot, or that she doesn't like me? She's supposed to be our best friend. Teachers should be sensitized to hearing that, that is, you know, an indication of a problematic interaction that could be bullying. Like, the teacher should know that, but at the same token, the child herself has to be taught what you do in that situation, whether it's how to answer back, like if someone says to you, like, you know, my sister, you know, your skirt looks like my little sister's, you pretend it was a compliment, and you just say, thanks, because then the girl who's trying to bully you doesn't have anywhere to go with it, or, you know, do you find different friends? But either way, the teachers have to be sensitized to listen, but they can't fight the child's battle for the child. The child needs to learn, and there absolutely are ways that children and the whole class can learn what to do in those types of tricky situations.
Wow, parenting is so much harder in 2020 than it's ever been. What suggestions do you have, parents, do about that?
So I strongly think that in a way it's harder, but in a way the fact that we're so much more aware, and like I said, I have to give you a lot of the credit for that, I think is, yes, it's harder. The world is scarier. The social world can be scarier. The stakes are higher. It is harder. We're in a whole new shifting technological world that changes every, like, half hour. And yeah, it really is hard, but we can educate ourselves, right? We can learn, and we can really work hard. And also, I feel like parents can do the work themselves. If a mother feels like, you know what, I didn't have a normal childhood myself, my parents weren't very attuned to mental health, you know, my parents, maybe even I went through an abusive childhood or a neglectful childhood, what do I do? How can I possibly parent children when I wasn't parented very well myself, right? But parents have to know that just because that's how you are today does not mean that that's how you will always be. You can always learn. You can always grow. You can always develop your skills. There are so many parenting classes. It's so much easier to access therapy. And yeah, if you want to be a good parent and you have some leftover baggage from your childhood, what's the problem? What's the disadvantage to shedding some of that baggage by finding a therapist or finding a parenting class? In parenting, sometimes we are parented. Sometimes the act of parenting helps us resolve old issues and problems from our past if we want to be mindful and conscious. So I feel very strongly that parents can avail themselves of what is available nowadays, because there's so much more available nowadays. And really, we can go into from 2020 to 2030 and make this the decade where we are so mindful of our parenting, and we parent our children to be so resilient that we don't even really need to, you know, worry about their future mental health, because we've for them.
And you do a lot of parenting classes, even on social media. For those that are interested, you give webinars. You want to give out your information, please?
So you can find me online. There is a website, targetedparenting.com, where you can find out about the webinars, and you can click on links to sample classes. I'm also on Instagram at Dr. Cogle at Psychology, and I have a Psychology Today blog, Targeted Parenting. If you Google it on the Psychology Today homepage, you'll find it. And all of those are, you know, free ways that I can educate the public.
Well, thank you very much for being on with us tonight, and hope to have you on again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for everything you do on behalf of Claudia Estrella. It's really an impressive thing that you have offered, and the way you've changed the world in the past 23 years has been amazing.
Thank you with my amazing staff. Thank you. All right, and if anyone needs a naloxone kit, free training, free naloxone kit, for prevention of opioid overdose, please call MASC. Our number is 718-758-0400. I want to wish Rufu Shlema to Yosef Ben Perel from the stabbing Moshe Shabbos at Rabbi Rottenberg Shul. To have a complete Rufu Shlema. I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Thank you, and have a good night.
Muncie, Brooklyn, Jersey City. If ever there was a moment to show up and be counted, this is the time. This Sunday, January 5th, we will march through our streets, proud, united, and strong. The 1.5 million Jews of our great city and region will not stand down. We will not be intimidated. We invite all New Yorkers of every background to stand with us and say no to hate and no to fear. Join us. On Sunday, January 5th at 11 a.m. at Foley Square, we will march together across the Brooklyn Bridge to Cadman Plaza. For up-to-the-minute details, visit ujafednewyork.org/marchnyc. No hate, no fear, Solidarity March is a project of UJA Federation and JCRC. Be there and make a difference.
Looking for a great kosher escape, looking for a great kosher vacation, then you must join Blima Yiddel Perlstein's Lucky Kosher Tours as they go to Thailand and Vietnam from February 17th to 25th. You get to go into the Choo Choo Tunnel and the rice paddies, as well as a Moped City Tour in Vietnam, and in Thailand visit the Royal Grand Palace and the bridge over the River Kwai, among many other destinations, including the floating market. So what are you waiting for? Call Lucky Kosher Tours for an experience of a lifetime. Call right now, 347-526-0657. Again, that's 347-526-0657, or online at kosherluckytours.com.
Next Matzah Shabbos, January 4th. Join us right here on 620 WSNR for special programming featuring Bonei Olam Live, a real look into Bonei Olam, plus a brand new program featuring Benny Friedman, Baruch Levine, New York Voice Choir, and the Shir V'Shevach Voice Choir, plus an all-new game show featuring many celebrities. All this and much more right here next week, 9 to 12 on 620 WSNR.